Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
California, welcome to the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
I've had a partner, Barbara Boxer of California, who has fought with me and marched with me and held hands with me. And if you want to see that change happen, well, then doggone it, re-elect Barbara Boxer to be your United States Senator. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you. God bless America.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
Now, you say, come on, Savage, why would you link Reverend Wright up with Barack Obama? I don't know. It was an instinct for one reason. If you listen to Barack at the Fairmont Hotel prior to going to the Gettys for another fundraiser, you have to ask yourself, why did he break into a cadence along the lines of Reverend Wright with the, she has hold my hands, she has marched with me, she is going to make the change. You know, I mean, it's interesting to me how they all change. He's not alone in that. I mean, politicians are chameleons. We understand that. And they tend to break into various dialects according to the crowd. I mean, Hillary Clinton was well known for it when she went down to Boca Raton to speak before Jewish groups noshing on bagels and lox. She spoke with a rising inflection. When she went out west, she spoke with a declining inflection. When she went to the northeast, she spoke with a lateral inflection. So it happens depending upon the audience. I just find it interesting as an observer, the Voltaire of radio, to sit here and observe the Parisians as they perform. So what do you want to talk about today? The news is so horrendous. Foreign mosque money. A jihadist says the Washington Post saved me from an airstrike. Obama's going to skip the Memorial Day at Arlington Cemetery. I mean, if that's not a mark of his disdain for the military, tell me what it is. It gets worse by the second. The oil leak, do I have to tell you, it's a symbol of the incompetence of the Obama administration, how these left-wing college types can't do anything, really, because they've all had tenure their whole lives. In fact, they were born with tenure. They've never had to work in their life. So I'm not surprised that they actually can't stop the oil leak. That's what the government's job, isn't it? Isn't it the government's job to stop the oil leak? Or am I mistaken? How is it that Spike Lee could make a movie accusing white people and Republicans of purposely blowing up the levees in order to kill black people? And that's sold. I mean, that's amazing to me. But now you have an example here of 30 days of foot dragging, the government doing nothing, and there's not a word out of the left wing. But you know, no one wants to talk about any of this. You know what I'm getting the most calls about? You're not going to believe it. Remember last week I played a piece from the movie The Misfits with Clark Gable, Marilyn Monroe, Montgomery Clift, and you heard the horse as he was being hobbled and tied down. And I talked about 1961 and how it was the last roundup. Well, I've gotten more calls on my comments about the Misfits and the horse. I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine. I'm not going to mention his name, but just trust me on this. He's a powerful human being. Man, if you touch the guy's arm while talking to him, it feels like you're touching a tree trunk. In other words, I'm a tapper when I talk to people. It's just the New York thing. When I talk, I tap. I sometimes touch people when I talk to them. I don't know why. I mean, it's a part of my background. You do it only with close friends. You don't touch strangers. They get, itchy. Particularly in San Francisco, you avoid that because they can read it the wrong way. But let's say you're talking to him. This guy's as tough as they come. like an oak tree. Let's put it to you that way. He calls me and he says, you know that piece you played from the Misfits? He said, the horse. He said, I almost started to weep. He said, I couldn't believe the sound. So play it right now. Let him hear what I'm talking about and where I'm going with it. Obama and the Last Roundup right now on the Savage Nation.
Why are you killing him?
Just stand aside, honey.
Okay, you won. All right, you won. You
let
won.
Let go of that rope. Get out of here.
Hey, darling.
Follow him. Choke him down, Guido. Get off me, Roger.
Stop.
Get off.
Roger,
shut up and pull that horse down. Get on. One, two.
Last night, I caught the end of a movie called The Misfits with Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, and Montgomery Clift. I had never actually seen the movie. I was astounded at this scene in this film. And the scene that I saw contained Marilyn Monroe, as I say, Gable and Montgomery Clift. And they were out hunting in an old airplane and an old pickup truck somewhere out west for wild Mustangs. They would chase the horses down in a pickup truck, lasso them from the back of the truck, tie them up, tie their 4 feet together. You see the horse laying there exhausted after it's been caught, and basically its eyes full of fear, as you can imagine, waiting to be picked up the next day by the slaughterhouse. Marilyn Monroe played an amazing role, that of a woman who screams at the men, "You're all murderers. Leave them alone. Let them go. You're all murderers." She put on an amazing scene. She was sort of the heart screaming out at these guys, and it was heart-wrenching to watch them chasing down. First, the mares. It was a stallion with three mares and a baby horse, whatever they call them. And they chased down the mares. They lasso them. And the horses would fight the best they could, trying to save their lives. But then the cowboys would tie up their four legs and tie them to their neck and leave them on the desert floor tied to a tire. Most touching scene was the colt, the little fowl, going up to paw the mother horse as she lay there all tied up, helpless on the ground. It's amazing to watch these horses. But then they go after the stallion, the head of the brood. The stallion puts up the greatest fight, but eventually he too was brought down by those men who wanted to sell him for the money, for 5 cents a pound. The three girl horses, the baby and the stallion. And as I watched the stallion being lassoed and brought down, I couldn't help but thinking what an amazing and apt description it is of the Lilliputians on the left and what they have done to the once great stallion of America. Through 1,000 lassos, they have brought us down. They have brought down this nation and have left us tied up for the slaughter. It will take an act of God to cut the ropes that bind us as we await the slaughterhouse. So that was then, and this is now. Now, why am I getting so many calls about my analysis of the Stallion of America 1961? It's very interesting to me. So today my monologue is entitled Obama and the Last Roundup. Why do I say Obama now and the Last Roundup, or Obama as the Last Cowboy, which is really more appropriate? I'll tell you why. The far left in this country labeled George W. Bush a cowboy, but in reality, it's Obama who's the cowboy. He's increased the number of troops in Afghanistan by 30,000. He's rounded up Christian militia groups that dare to challenge the new sheriff in town. He's hogtied the freedoms of the American people, binding their limbs with government health care, with taxes, and a massive crushing debt that is bankrupting future generations. See, in reality, Obama is the last cowboy, and this is the last roundup. And if this is the last roundup, I ask myself, where is the next frontier? Where do we go to escape the constraints of freedom as generation of generation after America of Americans have been able to do? Where do liberty-loving people go to be free of this fencing off of our rights? Just like the pioneers of yesteryear, we have to strike out into unknown territory to escape the filth and corruption that is killing America. But where are we going to go? So that's what I was talking about today, Obama, the last cowboy. I have a couple of other questions. And here it is. What do you think Obama, Rahm Emanuel, and David Axelrod are cooking up for America right now? What do you think Obama, Emanuel, and Axelrod are scheming to deprive us of our rights and freedoms? And do you believe that Rahm Emanuel has fled to Israel using his son's bar mitzvah as an excuse to avoid questioning about the Sestak job offer? You know, that's a huge story. Congressman Issa first said that Obama should be impeached. if it turns out he was behind this job offer to get out of the race, right? That's illegal. Illegal. What's illegal in a government? The government decides what's illegal. But the fact of the matter is, they say that an unknown official inside the White House, high up, was the one who offered Joe Sestak the job to get out of the race. Do you think it was Rahm Emanuel, who was conveniently in Israel for his son's bar mitzvah, that he's hiding in Israel in order to avoid questioning about the Sestak job offer? It's an interesting question, by the way, that no one has asked. I thought I would ask it. And yesterday I raised another question, which is the psychology of Barack Hussein Obama. Why would Barack Hussein Obama slap the military in the face and go away on the Memorial Day weekend and not go to Arlington National Cemetery, which is an American tradition going back to Johnson? He will not appear at the breakfast in the White House that morning for Gold Star families, families whose loved ones died in military service. He will not be there. If this is not a political mistake, I'd like to know what is, but it's more than that. The brain of Obama, Obama's brain is in Israel right now. That's a given. Now, that's a fair statement to make, because Karl Rove was called Bush's brain, and no one thought that was odd. So I'm saying Rahm Emanuel is Obama's brain. So while the brain is away, the child will play. And so the child's saying, you know what, I never really wanted to go to that cemetery anyway. Just a bunch of dead guys who, you know, with uniforms and guns. And I hate uniforms and I hate guns. And screw the military anyway. I think I'll go to Chicago to a steakhouse. Or whatever they do there in Chicago. But he's not going to be at Arlington National Cemetery because his brain is in Israel right now, apparently ducking all questions about Joe Sestak. So the question is, now that the Obama's brain is in Israel, in hiding, Rahm Emanuel, Obama's actually showing his true self. And the question I raise to you is the psychology of Obama. What is behind this man's activities right now? I'll be right back. So we're talking about Obama's brain, Rahm Emanuel, hiding in Israel right now to avoid questions about the allegations swirling around a job offer to Joe Sestak to drop out of a race in the Spectre deal. And we're talking about Obama coming to raise money for boxing. Now, Obama has a track record of 4-0 so far, going back to at least to Massachusetts. Every candidate he's come out to stump for has lost. So let's pray that the losing streak continues and it's 5-0. All of you phony liberals, do you happen to know what it cost last night to go to dinner at the Getty's house to raise money for Barbara Boxer? $17,600 a plate dinner to support the senator from Brooklyn. And there were about 100 people there for $17,600. I don't exactly know what was eaten, big deal. You know, they always make the menu, and it's a dinner with the president, and you get a photo op with the president, and you get a dinner served in the marble courtyard. I don't know what people go to these things, to be honest with you. My dinner last night was a barbecue chicken from a supermarket in a frying pan with a bottled tomato sauce that I love very much, with rice that I made thrown over it with certain spices. I'm not saying I would not have rather had Kobe beef, but I could have bought Kobe beef if I wanted it. I have no idea why anybody would go to a dinner and eat almond ice cream at their age, to be honest with you. But you do know that we're living in a sort of banana republic right now, speaking of desserts, in that there were no press people permitted to go to the Getty house. What's most interesting to me is that the great president was at the home of Ann and Gordon Getty. And they're calling them philanthropists, Ann and Gordon Getty. Now, if they were Republicans, would people who have never worked a day in their life, who inherited the money from a great-grandfather who made his fortune in the oil business, Getty Oil, be called philanthropists or something else? Tell me what the inheritors of an oil fortune would be called if they were Republicans and it was a Republican president coming to town to raise money for a Republican senator that everyone hated. And it was at the home of a couple, as I said, whose money was built entirely upon an inheritance based upon an oil fortune. Would they be called the philanthropists, Ann and Gordon Getty, or something else? And what would the phony liberals be saying about $17,600 a plate to be present there? I mean, I can, you know, you don't have to answer the question. You know what it is. Another fabulous menu was dreamed of last week by First Lady Maria Shriver. First Lady Maria Shriver? Shriver? Oh, I'm sorry. That's Governor Schwarzenegger's wife. That's right. That's right. Can I say anything about it? I'm going to leave it alone. I have enough enemies in the city. I don't have to make any more. It's enough already. We'll let it go at that. You know, when you tell me someone's a protocol chief, I reach for my vomit bag. Only an out-of-town city like San Francisco would have a so-called protocol chief. How in the world can anyone believe that this city needs a protocol chief? What are we, children? Who is this woman anyway? She has more last names than menus. I'm not going to mention a name, but I'm sick and tired of reading about this old hag. I'm sick of it already. Protocol chief, Charlotte Schultz. Oh, excuse me. I thought it was Charlotte Maylard Swig Schultz. You know, that's where the money came from before the Schultz entered the picture. I'm sick of it. I don't like living in these out-of-town provinces anymore. But people say to me, well, why do you stay there if you don't like it? That's because there's no Chinese food in Texas or I'd move tomorrow. I was interviewed this morning by a major, you know, major newspaper, probably the biggest newspaper in the world. And we spoke about an hour and a half on the back of my boat. I met him on the back of my boat. We talked, Teddy and me and the reporter. Nice, very nice guy. So he asked me a lot of questions, mainly, what made you a conservative? When did you see yourself becoming conservative? And all of that stuff. The stories I've told you, I'm not going to repeat them again. But he asked a good question. Why do you stay here if you can't stand it here? I said, well, for one, approximately one out of three people is a conservative, but you know, are conservative, but you never hear from them. They've been silenced by the protocol chiefs who sit and listen to them, the little Nazis running around who think that they own everybody's mind and you know, and heart. They don't own my heart and mine. And they can go to hell if they think they're going to tell me what I should do and how I should think and how what the protocol is. I'm sick of these people. And they're not driving me out of town. I'll drive them out of town, frankly, is what I'd like to say. But I love the weather. So he said, but really, why do you stay here? I said, for the same reason Voltaire stayed in Paris. He said, if you're going to write about the foibles of the Parisians, where am I supposed to live?
Savage.
And it's good to be here in the home state of my friend, somebody who has been fighting the good fight for this state for so many years. And then you look at her, you realize she started when she was 12.
So here he is going to the failed campaign of Barbara Boxer, the most hated woman in political history, a carpetbagger of the lowest order who's way behind in the polls because she's run California off the rails. And he has a 4-0 record so far. Let's hope it's 5. But, you know, when you read these provincial reports of what they did in the Gettys, you have to almost laugh at it, the way Voltaire probably laughed at the Parisians celebrating themselves and how important they were. So you read the local paper, and it says, in 2008, he visited the Getty home, Obama did. Only hors d'oeuvres were nibbled then. Still, Obama made a visit to the Getty kitchen, where he graciously thanked Johnson and her crack crew. Now, I don't know if they meant that inadvertently or it's bad writing. You mean they were using crack? Or is it a crack crew? Well, let's go past that. So Tuesday night, the plan was passed hors d'oeuvres, including quail egg with caviar. Now, how does PETA feel about quail eggs with caviar? How about salmon ceviche with yikama? When I hear the word yikama, I reach for my raincoat and run out of the house. Anyone who serves yikama, I don't want to know. The dinner was spring onion asparagus tartlet. Wait a minute. Spring onion asparagus tartlet? That couldn't be Boxer because she's no spring onion. With Meyer lemon vinaigrette dressed frisée salad. A main course of braised Kobe beef short ribs with potato puree. I don't eat potato puree. Anyone over 5 shouldn't eat mashed potatoes. Don't these chefs know anything about health? A salsa verde top spring vegetable ragu was followed by buckwheat crepes with roasted cherries and almond ice cream. Puke-a-roo. You know, my mother, may she rest in peace, had a 4-burner stove with electric top in a little kitchen in Queens. When my mother put out in one evening, beat, I guarantee you, what this chef did her entire life. This is like out of a cooking school. I never saw anything like this. Main course included Commander of the Royal Victorian Order veal piccata. Oh, I'm sorry. This is in a restaurant. I missed that one. The Schwarzenegger went to my friend's restaurant and he didn't invite me. He'll hear about that one. All right, so what is Obama's psychology? That's what I want to know. What do you think Obama is doing now that his brain is at a bar mitzvah in Israel? Michael in San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation. Give us your advice. I understand you claim to be a psychologist.
No, I did psychiatric residency, and you've been asking what happened. As you know, Freud always talked about the first or early childhood experiences, not first,
right,
or early.
Right.
That forms the personality, but he never really published what therapy he was using. He talked about this a lot, but the therapy was not taught. I have the experience of a classic Freudian analysis.
Oh, thank God. You're one of the few, one of the last of the Mohicans who actually studied Freud.
Well, part of it was, when I was doing the residency, there was no real therapies in the early 60s. So it was turning to drugs, so Libriums.
Right, Valium. Right. Librium and other tranquilizers and some shock therapy was used. But in your analysis, is there something you can tell us about Obama's behavior that indicates some childhood trauma?
Light bulb went on right from the beginning, 3 years ago or so, but... really, you made a remark about the absent mother also, and that's when it really rang the bell, because the two major things that form our early childhood experiences with many, many people that I've talked to, usually men suffer, or so to speak, or make their major memory that drives their whole life unconsciously, unbeknownst to them, is rejection by the father, perceived or real. Sometimes the child perceives it, but they made it.
You mean the Oedipal complex that he runs to the mother if he's a man?
I'm not even involved with the Oedipal complex.
Oh, so you're talking strictly about the rejection by the father. So why do you suppose that Obama was rejected by his Kenyan father and then his Indonesian father?
Walked out on the whole setup, mother and all. I didn't read his book, and I may never read it, but...
No, but she left him for very long periods of time to run off with various, to pursue her own studies and with various, men, and the grandmother raised him largely.
The second step, the father disappeared first, was it around 2 years age? And
so, oh, the father who went back to Kenya, who thought he'd be a big bureaucrat and wound up a drunk and dead. That father, yes, the real father.
Okay. I don't know when the second father, but that looked like more of a young stud that the mother teamed up with Obama sitting on that Indonesian chair.
Well, she probably met him at the East-West Center. I mean, the University of Hawaii had a lot of the third world as they come in with the outfits and the brocades, and then a lot of the hippie chicks went for them. I don't really know what he was like.
So while he was growing up there in those formative years, he was feeling rejection from having the father there, whatever length of time it was,
and right.
The substitute father, stepfather. I don't know about, but I suspect there was a lot of feelings and experiences with other.
So your basic premise as a psychiatrist or a man who took residency in psychiatry is that he really is driven by unconscious forces, as most of us are, and a lot of this has to do with the rejection by the father. Is that what you're saying, Michael?
When he experienced the feelings, emotions of rejection, which are not good, he would have made a decision about those feelings, how to cope with them, which we all have the same experience.
Okay, so if we take your analysis and we apply it to him not showing up this weekend at Arlington National Cemetery, is that kind of rejecting the patriarchal image in the form of a soldier? Rejecting soldier? Rejecting father?
No,
getting even?
I really think that's... When he was dealing with those emotions back as a child, he made a decision how to deal with those feelings that he didn't like. And one of them appears to me and it, we have to include the mother's abandonment of him over time, or various times, so that reinforced this, whatever the emotions were of loneliness or unwanted or whatever they were. We don't know unless he tells us how he dealt with those feelings. But he would have made up to his decisions coping, and it looks to appears to me that there are very much superiority feelings that he can do. He's going to show them, or show us, or overcome these feelings with the total superiority. And
So that's the arrogance that people see when he cocks his head back and looks down on people with disdain. That would reflect some of that superiority complex.
Absolutely, with his nose and chin up in the air all the time when he's speaking, and looks down on us on television. Yes, that's it in its simplest form. If we knew what he feelings he had that he doesn't like, that he's dealing with, I'm convinced from working with other people and men particularly, this feeling of rejection never goes away. And the more you try to get rid of those feelings you don't like, starting back in the childhood experience, the stronger they become, and the more.
So the answer, then is Librium.
The Librium, and now it's antidepressants.
I'm joking, of course. But there's no answer to these problems. Actually, you just learn to live with them the best you can without doing too much harm during your life. I mean, basically, you know, there's something Freud wrote. Tell me if you remember this one. Someone said to him, what do you do if you wake up one day and you find out you have only one arm and one leg? You know, meaning that psychologically, one arm and one leg, meaning you're mentally crippled. He said, then you crawl on one arm and one leg.
Yeah, you're not only wounded, you're crippled throughout life mentally, psychologically. But if you should find somebody who understands this early experience and the feelings that you don't like running you into the ground, and believe me, there are people. There are professionals who know how to use this technology, and I've benefited from it myself. And of course, my eyes were opened and able to relate it to all the other things I learned in.
You mean because you had been rejected by your father?
I had the feeling I did.
Ah,
you see, sometimes children make up things from experiences that were not exactly the way we thought they were as a child.
Yes. You know what's interesting? Sometimes a brother and a sister in the same house, or let's say three brothers, two sisters, have the same exact mother and father, same exact house, and they have all different experiences and views of the parents. Isn't that true?
That's very true, and especially if there's more than 3 years difference between children. In my case, there was 6 years difference with my brother, and I can say unquestionably experience rejection in reality and in, you know, mentally.
I feel like if we stay on the phone any longer, I'm going to give you therapy.
No, you don't have to.
I'm joking. Come on. And I'm drawing you out now about your father's problem. But look, we all have, you know, I have my own theory. It's very interesting we're talking about it. Maybe it's a little beyond the average radio audience, but I've often wondered about entertainers or politicians or people who achieve anything in life to begin with, and parental rejection, parents driving them on. You're not good enough. You know, do more. If you don't do more, you're not my son, that kind of thing. I would think that any great achiever in any field, whether it's bicycle racing, talk radio, psychiatry, politics, or whatever, they're being run by emotions based very much along the lines of what you're talking about a parent who is not satisfied with no matter what they achieve. I have a very wealthy friend who gives to a lot of causes. His father, if he'd come home with a 96, his father would say, why didn't you get 100? And he had that his whole life, and he's been a super achiever his entire 82 years. He even didn't stop him from going on in life. He just overcame it by working harder.
His solution to the feelings he didn't like is to achieve, to drive himself.
Right. No, I don't say he's happy, and I don't say that people who are driven and successful are happy anyway. I agree with you 100%. I mean, human happiness is another quotient that I don't think anyone can quantify in any manner and give a roadmap to. It's very interesting, but I'm trying to figure out Obama's exact psychological mechanism, if I can, even as a citizen of the country, because something doesn't add up. with his level of arrogance and also the mistakes he's making politically. The mistakes in the way of not going to Arlington on, to make it very blunt and very pragmatic, not going to Memorial Day services at Arlington, to me, is a blunder. And there's something to it that doesn't make sense. And that's what I'm trying to get to, Doctor. And I thank you for calling the Savage Nation. Unfortunately, it's been 46 minutes since the show started. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we have the new Romanovs in the United States of America. Those, of course, were the was the ruling family of Russia before the revolution. Only now that the trick is now the Bolsheviks are now the Romanovs, and so he goes to a $17,000 a person dinner at the Getty Mansion, and the dinner guests who are supposed to be progressives pay $17,600, as I said, to dine on quail egg with caviar, not a word from animal rights activists, salmon ceviche with yicama and avocado, I wouldn't touch that, on a tortilla chip. Who comes up with this crap? What kind of idiot? This is a cooking school thought that they, you know, they make up anything they want. It's like a garble. Who in the hell in their right mind would want to eat yicama and avocado on a tortilla chip? If someone ever offered that to me, I wouldn't eat that garbage. Next, they're served a spring onion asparagus tartlet. As I said, that can't be boxer because she's too old for that. With Meyer lemon vinaigrette dressed frisée salad. Big deal. Main course, Kobe beef, short ribs, potato puree, salsa verde, top spring vegetable ragu. It's all fancy, you know, means nothing. Topped off with crepes. Oh, buckwheat crepes, sorry. With roasted cherries and almond ice cream. And you get a picture with the Obama. As he campaigned for the failing Barbara Boxer campaign for 17-6. What are you going to say about it? You know, I guess we were not regaled to what they drank with the little people. I guess we only drink Ajax beer. I'll bet all of those rich elitists had Chardonnay or Chablis wine, too, from Napa Valley. Well, we certainly can't have that. Only they get it. Ah, come on. Who writes this stuff? 19-hour whirlwind Bay Area fundraising trip. Filled Boxer's wallet with $1.75 million, blah, blah, blah. So he can afford to come out here to raise money for her, but he won't go to Arlington. All right, we know that, but you don't care about it. Libs love it because they hate the military. But, you know, here's the thing I'm saying. He's a smart politician or he wouldn't be president. He used all of the bankers to become president. They thought he was just a puppet. They don't know that he's now the puppet master and they're the puppets. He didn't understand that. They didn't understand that. They'll find out soon enough who the boss is. After all, he has absolute power. He said so the other day at West Point. Okay, so now he has absolute power, and he's starting to kick around the people who put him in power, except for those who really put him in power, the shadow government who you never see, because they don't live in America. Most of the shadow government, they don't live anywhere. They're men without a country. They don't want a country. They have no name. They're transnational thieves. They're men without a country because they're transnational thieves. You know that, and I know that. They break stock markets. They break currencies. They break nations over their knee. And, of course, we do nothing about it because we don't have a government representing us. If we did, they'd be in jail. Their assets seized. In other words, they're all Madoffs, only they didn't get caught yet. So there we are. That's the story. And where we go from here is this. So Obama's brain, Rahm Emanuel, is at a bar mitzvah in Israel right now, ducking all questions about maybe he did, maybe he didn't, da, 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 da. So now that Obama's brain is away, the controller is away. So Obama says, okay, now I'm going to do exactly what I want. Because he's not afraid of Axelrod. Somehow he's afraid of Emmanuel. Maybe it's the towel, I don't know, the gym thing. I don't know anything about that. I don't want to know any more about it. I don't care about men in gyms and towels. I mean, remember that one went on with the gym and the towel and this and the naked and this and the yelling and the screaming at people with a naked. I didn't get the whole innuendo of that. It was all somewhat a little too much for me. It was on the homoerotic store side with the towel and the yelling at him in a locker room. I couldn't follow the implication. I didn't quite know. All I know is that it didn't make sense to me. All right, so he's a rough customer from Israel, and he runs the whole show, and now he's there with at the bar mitzvah and the wailing wall, and so now Obama's doing what he wants. So the first thing he does, I'm not going to his Memorial Day at Arlington. I don't want to go. You have to go, Mr. President, because we're going to lose the military vote. As it was, we only got 12%, and mainly it was the the children who had children in the military who voted for you. The rest wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole anyway. Well, who needs them? They're not going to vote for me anyway. I'm not going to Arlington. And why'd you send me to West Point? I hated being there. I hated being there because all these guys intimidated me. All these guys intimidated me because I know that they all are going to, you know, risk their lives for the country. They've all sworn to uphold the Constitution, and I don't really believe in that. Why do I have to even be around that hokey stuff anymore? What's this West Point? I mean, after all, we're not really a militant nation. What do we need a West Point for? No, you have to go to West Point. So he went there, and he got disrespected. Now, the Republicans say he's thin-skinned. We all know that by the facial gestures, the arrogance, how he tries to berate people. It's all behavior unbecoming a first citizen, as you well understand. And so now he makes up for West Point by saying, you know, the hell with the military. They didn't really give me enough of a cheer the other day. After all, I have absolute power, which was astonishing. How did you not see that? How did you not hear that? Do you have the I have absolute power a soundbite, Beowulf? I want the people to hear it. Tell me when it's ready. Play it.
Superintendent indicated, under our constitutional system, my power as president is wisely limited. But there are some areas where my power is absolute.
He almost launched into a Mussolini. He almost started screaming from a bell tower. My power is absolute! But he didn't do that because he caught himself. But that's what he was really saying. And you little bums in your cadet uniforms, you're nothing but ushers to me. And I could order all of you to your death by making you run over a minefield. So I'm not going to Arlington.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
California, welcome to the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Here you got folks driving a car in the ditch, and then we're out there in the mud pulling the car out of the ditch, and they're sitting there comfortable drinking on a Slurpee or something and saying, you know, you're not pulling the car out of the ditch fast enough. You're not doing that the right way. When you put your shoulder there behind you, you gotta lean into it. So then we finally get the car out of the ditch, and they want the keys back.
Expecting the truth from a politician would be like expecting a home-cooked meal at the Getty Mansion. Welcome to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Visit michaelsavage.com. Good night. I just figured I'd fire a New Yorker at you. Okay, that's called a firing in my normal cadence. I have to learn to talk slower to become a national star. I just slow my natural rhythm of speech down because you're speaking to a lot of people, not to, you know, a person. But what I just said is true. I mean, you expect truth out of Obama. The Republicans drove the car in the ditch, and now they're drinking a Slurpee, and he's done the job and pulled it out of the ditch. Okay, so Bush was a fiscal socialist. I said that for 2 years. And he ran the country into the ditch. Yes, a $1 trillion deficit was a serious problem. And so this man's solution is to create a $3.5-4 trillion deficit. That's his solution. That's totally illogical. It's insane, and it's bullcrap. Okay, he didn't pull a car out of the ditch. The car's not out of the ditch. It's all smoke and mirrors anyway. But I'm not going to get excited. We got bigger problems to worry about than Obama's lies and whether or not his brain, Obama's brain, Rahm Emanuel, will come back from Israel to face the music. Because Joe Sestak, as you well know, if you know what's brewing, is that Daryl Issa, Republican California, good guy, says that Joe Sestak was offered a job to withdraw from the race against the disgraced, failed Philadelphia lawyer who just lost, whose name I already forgot, the guy who released Ira Einhorn. I don't remember his name, that piece of, that Philadelphia lawyer, whatever his name is. You know who I mean. You know, spectators. Arlen spectator. So Daryl Issa, listen to what Issa says in clip 12, then I'll come back to this.
It's very clear it's not for the White House to decide what's inappropriate. An allegation has been made that multiple sources in both parties, Anthony Weiner, Dick Morris, and other Democrats, have made it very clear, that, and even Axelrod, that they should answer that, in fact, this is serious. This is an impeachable offense, according to Dick Morris. It's not about what was done wrong. It's about the cover-up. And right now, there's a cover-up going on at the White House.
All right, so that's what Daryl Issa says. Now, the question is who in the government did it. If Axelrod's calling for an investigation and says there should be an answer, it means that it was Rahm Emanuel, because no matter whether they're working together or not, they're both always vying for power. It's the way structures work. And Rahm Emanuel is conveniently in Israel, where he's not well-liked at all because he basically shafted Israel, even though he's of Israeli birth, I believe. I know his father's is an Israeli. And his father was a revolutionary who helped to create the nation of Israel. It's possible that he's hiding in Israel right now while this storm blows over. So the question becomes, what is the question? The question becomes many questions. And many questions lead to no answers, because when you've got a cover-up of this magnitude, you're living in Greece of the 1960s when the communists were running the country. And so here we are. We're now living in Greece. 1-800-449-8255. We could go to the psychology callers. The callers are psychologists who are going to tell us about Obama's brain, his actual brain, and what mindset he has. So let's start in Indiana. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation. You are a therapist, yes or no?
Yes.
What kind of therapy do you... Mental health clinician. And your judgment is that Obama is?
Well, I cannot ethically diagnose someone who's not my client. However, I would say his style most closely fits with that of a narcissistic personality disorder.
Well, yeah. I mean, I basically, as an amateur psychologist, said that when I wrote Obama on the Couch in 08. Mm-hmm. When you say narcissist disorder, you define it for us, please.
Well, a personality disorder is different than just a personality style. It's a coping mechanism. When there are deficits that occur, they fall back on different types of coping mechanisms to deal with feelings that are uncomfortable for them. So sometimes those feelings can be acting out, like, you know, someone could become violent. Other times the more acting in, where they become self-destructive. In a narcissistic style, you can think of it kind of as an elaborate suit of armor that mm-hmm. they wear to cover up what they would perceive in their own selves as areas of lacking. And mm-hmm. what happens is when something zings into that armor, generally it'll bounce off. If ever it mm-hmm. were to find a chink and go through the armor, their response is to come back so aggressively to the individual who was, in their mind, an offender, that it just about, it really surprises people. I was reading about what the Republicans were saying in their luncheon with the president, and I was mm-hmm. thinking this is perfectly...
What, they said he's thin-skinned and should take a Valium because he doesn't listen to them? He flares up immediately?
Yes.
Is that what you...
Yes, it's a response. Now, for some individuals, it can become more of a physically aggressive response. For others, it's more of a verbal response, and usually an effort of whatever it takes to shut that individual down. And it doesn't matter.
Here's the thing. You remember this. Obama is a product of affirmative action. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. He got into Punahou probably on a scholarship based upon something to do with his brains, certainly, and something to do with affirmative action. And this was true every step of the way. There was also the situation in Hawaii where rich white liberals always bowed down and catered to people of color. I saw it when I lived there. I knew that set very well. I knew what these radical leftists were like. They always, in essence, patronized people of color. That's number one. They never really worshipped them. They patronized them. So what I'm getting at is Obama never really faced any serious opposition to any of his thoughts or any of his feelings or statements. The world was laid before him. He was a good-looking young guy, handsome guy, tall, athletic. He spoke beautifully. He had a very deep voice. And so, therefore, the world gave him everything he wanted. He never really had anyone saying, no, you're wrong, or don't do this, don't do that. He didn't really struggle. There is no struggle there. The grandmother raised him. She struggled. The grandmother. Okay, so now he becomes president. And what happens is he's facing the nation. And the nation is very divided. It's been divided for quite a while right now. He doesn't like that. He's not used to it. And so he starts to get nasty. He starts saying things about the American people. They're this, they're that. They're not civil. They're I mean, and worse than that. They ought to be reined in. And then his minions on various networks start to say things such as sedition. The little men, the little midgets, the Lilliputians who work in the government media complex start saying anyone who's criticizing the president. First, they tried racism. Remember that? That didn't stick because everyone said, foul ball, that doesn't work. They tried the standard liberal tricks, the bag of tricks. All right, let's try racism on them. That worked for 20 years. Well, keep saying it. You can yank yourself with that one because we're not buying it. Racist, my eye. We don't like him because of his policies, not because of his race. So they didn't use the racism for very long. They tried it. It didn't work. So the next thing was sedition. That didn't fly. It bounced back in their face. So now we're faced with a situation where he doesn't know what to use to get the criticism, to get the critics off his back and actually answer them. It's been a year since he's had a press conference. 1 year. He's actually going to hold another one this week. And he's going to literally supposedly take questions. But you know, it's again, what do you mean take questions from who? The department store dummies with that they call reporters today? Are any of them going to really challenge the man? You know that half the questions are going to be fed to the stooges who are going to ask him irrelevant questions that no one wants an answer to, in order to waste time and burn it up and make it look like he took questions. So we don't have a free press anymore. We have a fifth column, as I said. And so we have a man who is very, very thin-skinned, very marginal, way over his head, certainly not qualified to be president. Let's put aside all of the other things. He is not qualified to be president. He is inexperienced as a senator. He has no worldly experience, truthfully, outside of academia. He has hung around with radical leftists his entire life. He was in a church that taught hate America first. And so now we have a situation where he's hitting real challengers who have real concerns, and we have real problems. 4 terrorist events that failed, not because the government interfered with the act, but because they failed. They failed for various reasons. The government failed us 4 in a row. The BP blowout in the Gulf, government in action, 30 days, nothing, nada, zero. North Korea threatening us, nothing from the president. Iran building a nuclear weapon, nothing from the president. All he's concerned about is fundraisers, and basketball. Well, you know what? I want more than night basketball out of a president, and I'll be right back. There's a big story. I'm going to go back to this. We have a couple of psychologists holding on the line who want to talk about Obama's mindset. There's a story that just came out from Kenner, Louisiana, on the Gulf oil explosion. And apparently there was a heated argument on the rig that blew up hours before the blast. And it looks, by what I'm reading, that BP execs overrode the men who were running the rig. The Transocean mechanics did not want to do a certain thing. And there was a skirmish at a meeting between the mechanic running the Transocean rig, the mechanical crew, who knew what they were doing, and someone from BP who told them something else to do about removing heavy drilling fluid and replacing with lighter seawater from a riser pipe connected to the wellhead. I can't follow the actualities of that because I'm not a hydraulics engineer. But the fact of the matter is, there was some disagreement, and it led to the blow up. And that's unto itself phenomenally interesting, but of no value to the environment. I mean, at the end of the day, nor does it explain why the government's done nothing for 30 days. I mean, you can read all about all of this from today until tomorrow. But why has the government done nothing? Where's the Interior Department? Where's FEMA? Where's the Department of Homeland Security? Zero, worthless, nada. New York, W.O.R. Allen, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'm a military psychologist trained at Johns Hopkins and at Bethesda Naval Hospital.
Okay.
I was answering your question. I looked it up in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. My commander-in-chief suffers from a 301.81, which is a narcissistic personality, which that lady
yes.
did the other psychologist discussed with you, but she didn't do the criteria. It's criteria one where he has an over embellished self-esteem, but his
yes.
but his self-esteem is very fragile. He likes to associate himself with privileged and famous people. He needs to have the best doctors, the best suits, the best whatever, and he has a grandiose sense of self-importance. Of course, we both know the president has that. I also did a 313.89, which is the reactive attachment disorder of infant and early childhood, and the 309.21, which would be the separation anxiety disorder. I can fully understand the problems that he went through with his father's situation, but, you know, a lot of fathers aren't there. So, you know, I suggest they suck it up
yes,
and march on.
That's right. Remember, most marriages end in divorce, and many fathers are absentee. They're like dogs today. They don't have the guts to be a man and raise a family. They run away. We understand that. So he's not alone at that. In that, the only reason we're asking these questions is because we're starting to see manifestations of this disorder with regard to policy, and it's not working out for America. That's what we're talking about. It seems to be clouding his judgment. Would you agree with that assessment?
I definitely do. Of course, it's clouding his judgment. He has his own agenda, and unfortunately, you know, I want to ask this. If, you know, if, of course, he probably presented these symptoms early in youth. And I want to know, what did Michelle ever see in a man like this? I mean, is she equally as dysfunctional?
Well, I'd rather not even raise that question at this time. We do know that there's no such thing as a first lady. They're co-presidents, and they have been. Any married man knows that the wife is a co-leader of the family today, if not the leader of the family. You'd be a fool not to know that. The gender has nothing to do with the level of intelligence. I haven't any idea about the interrelations between the couple, but I'm frankly mentally curious about the president's psychology, because I think it's affecting his judgment, as we said, and I believe his judgment is flawed. And I believe that this flawed judgment explains why he's able to run up a $4 trillion deficit in a year and a half and say that he solved the problem that the Republicans created. That's delusional on top of it all. Is that not a delusional conclusion to say that he inherited a car in the ditch and he pulled it out of the ditch and everything's well again?
No. No. But I also would like to thank you as being an active duty member of the military.
Wait. Why would he skip Memorial Day at Arlington Cemetery? What statement is he making to the military in doing that?
He's thumbing his nose at the military and disrespecting the people that provided the blanket of freedom that he lives under and the blanket of freedom that put him through the university.
All right, we understand that, but why would he do that? It's politically foolish to do that. Why is he doing that? He's going to pay for this politically in the midterm elections because the military will not vote for Democrats after this. That's if the idiot Republicans exploit this properly, which, of course, is not a given. So why is he doing it if it's a political stupidity?
You know, it definitely is a given if they exploit it at all.
All right. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back. That's a
Savage.
Now, some of you heard, I went to the Republican caucus today. It was a warm and cuddly meeting. The last time I appeared, it was before the House Republican caucus, and We agreed to let the press in on that one. This one, not so much.
Why are they laughing? Why are these communists laughing when he says no press allowed? Well, what's wrong with these people? Are they that stupid? What's interesting here is that the man takes the time at a fundraiser to bash the other party instead of talking about the greatness of America and how he's trying to pull us together. Don't you see the narcissism here and the fact that he's way over his head in his job and that he's continuously running for office because he doesn't know? He really feels in his heart he's not qualified to be president. And we've covered this over and over again, and I think I'm going to stop it for right now. We know what we have here. The problem is, how do we stop it? Here's another one. TARP investments lead to huge losses for U.S. Treasury. This came out of the Daily Finance just now. As struggling banks get acquired or fail, the U.S. Treasury is shouldering a growing burden. Its TARP investments have turned out to be a bust, and there are signs of more trouble ahead. This guy Geithner is perhaps the biggest dummy in the history of economics. The man can't even afford to pay for his own house. The man doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He's a puppet. The man is a puppet, and he's in charge of the U.S. Treasury. Well, why? Because the people who put Obama in power put this schmuck in charge of the Treasury. So let's go to the psychologist now. Athena in New York, welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I just wanted to say that I think you're spot on with all of your observations and assessment of Mr. Obama. I have to say, as a psychologist, someone had called earlier, mentioned the narcissistic disorder. I think that's also very accurate. We have to keep in mind, Michael, that mental disorders do affect judgment. And clearly, this seems to be what's going on now with Mr. Obama. I think his behavior is oppositional. The fact that, number one, he is not going to Arlington this weekend, as you said.
Let's focus on that with me. Your analysis of that would be very much appreciated.
Okay. I think part of it, the political part, I may not be privy to. I'm not an expert at politics. But I can tell you this. Think of a young child. Issues of abandonment, issues of loss via any parental figure. In this case, it could be with Mr. Obama's father or with his mother. There's a certain sense of arrested development that happens. It could be early on. It could be during the adolescent years. So think of an adolescent when you say, come on, we're going to Aunt Tilly's house tonight. What does the adolescent say? I'm not going. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So part of this behavior is that oppositional behavior that you will see in a child who lives in an egocentric world. It's all about him or her. It's all about Johnny or Mary. And I think this is exactly what is going on with Mr. Obama. Clearly, I have said it from the get-go. I have believed it from the get-go, Michael. I have a father who will be 85 years old this Sunday. He is a World War II vet, Battle of the Bulge, under George S. Patton. And, in fact, I happen to be a Queens girl as well. I grew up in Flushing.
Sounds like you and I went to Queens. You sound like a friend of mine from undergraduate, but I won't go in. So keep going. Sorry.
Oh, no. So my father, who's been under the weather recently, I said to him, Dad, did you happen to hear what's going on this weekend? And he said, well, what is that? He said, it's Memorial Day, and all our wonderful men and women throughout the wars will be honored. And I said, but one important person won't be there. And he said, who's that? And I told him, and he said, this is a disgrace to this country. I'm upset now, he said, a tear's coming to my eye, and this is abominable. And, Michael, it is. And let me get another point that I mentioned to your screen.
Well, it is abominable, but why is he doing it is the question.
I think, again, as I said, he is functioning as if he is still an adolescent, okay? He missed out on stuff from mom. He missed out on stuff from dad. There's a sense of omnipotence. There's a sense of arrogance. There's a sense of entitlement. And when you feel all of that, and you perceive that in yourself, Michael, you feel that you rule the world.
Oh, my God. All right, so this can be very toxic to a nation to have a child president.
Yes, basically he is. He's a teenage president. The oppositional, I'm not going to Aunt Tilly. You can't make me do it. Okay, that egocentric world.
And also the Republicans are wrong about everything. They're standing in my way. They're no good. I'm always good. I'm always right. They're always wrong.
You make an excellent point. Didn't you and I say that to our parents when they said, you can't go out to your friend's house? And I would say, my parents are so stupid. They're wrong. They don't know what.
So, in other words, the people themselves, the American people who oppose him, are also seen as his enemy, in essence, his opponent.
Absolutely.
He doesn't take any of his opposition in mind as being valid. So the whole Tea Party movement, in order for him to accept them, he would have to reject himself and the construct of himself. So he rejects them not for their policies, but they're all evil racists or they're all evil, dumb militia members, in essence. Isn't that what you're saying as well?
Correct, because, and you just hit it on the head again, Michael, if he were to accept them, it would devalue his own self-confidence, which we know he doesn't have any, but it would devalue any sense of himself, as little as it may be at this point. So therefore, as you just eloquently said, he has to say no to everybody. I'm the king, I'm in charge, I'm in the middle of the room for the birthday party at age 7, at age 10, at age 16, and that's basically in a nutshell. And please, may I just add, I happen to...
Wait, hold on. But that's true about a lot of politicians, the narcissism. It's true about actors for sure. I don't know if you've had an active practice, but I would guess that anyone who treats performers would know that they all suffer from a similar personality. And that's certainly part of the human condition. Some of them are wonderful people and wonderful performers, but now we have such an individual as president. But having said that, he is certainly not the first narcissist stuck in such a dilemma, is he?
He's probably one of the more obvious ones, and I think one of the more dangerous ones.
Okay, why dangerous?
When one begins to feel such a great sense of omnipotence, when one feels such a great sense of arrogance, one starts to make stupid decisions. And stupid decisions, when you're an actor, doesn't affect me. I might not like your movies.
Exactly. That's exactly right. We laugh at them. When an actor gives an opinion on politics, we laugh at them. We mock them. We say, what do you expect from an actor? They don't have a writer and a director, so we hear who they are. And they're usually undeveloped people who went to the High School of Performing Art in Manhattan. And they wound up the same thing at 50 that they were at 20. So we don't take them seriously. But in essence, he's sort of like a kid who went to the High School of Performing Art and is now president.
I think so. I think you hit it on the head again. And can I add one more thing, Michael, please?
You know, I'm starting to get worried. I may call you up to be my therapist.
It would be my pleasure. I happen to be a huge dog lover, and I mentioned this to a colleague recently, and they said no one's ever mentioned it. Okay, he has, I might also mention, no one has mentioned that his grandmother had passed away, and he never attended her funeral.
Well, hold on. You know, you're bringing up something that people don't talk about because it's very, very dangerous to do. Do you remember when she was lingering in her last days, he went to Honolulu in the midst of a very busy season? He went there for one night, and she mysteriously died, and he flew back the next day. Do you remember that?
I certainly do.
Now, there were rumors on the internet, which I do not want to invest much time in, that this grandmother was probably chastising him about a number of things, and she was a threat to his campaign. Could that, well, you know, we could say, could that be possible? Of course it could be possible. But that's too horrible to even imagine, isn't it?
It's just a thought, again, an incident where he should have been present, okay, unless you don't love your grandmother, you're not that close to her, but this is a woman that raised him. It perplexed
me. Wait, he flew over there when she was lingering. She died that night that he was at her bedside, right? And then what, he left and didn't stay for the funeral? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying. As I recall, that's how it went down.
All right. And well, again, somebody will write a book about this man who is an objective writer one day, and it won't be me. That's not my forte. But what you said about him, the narcissist, the aggrandizement, insecure, applies to so many millions of people, does it not?
It applies to the man that runs the deli counter at Waldbaum's, but he's not running my country, Michael.
All right. Wait, I understand that, but we're not suggesting, though, that we're going to get a perfect man to run for office or a perfect woman. I would think that many of these negative attributes that we are aligning us, applying to Obama could easily have been applied to George Bush as well. He was rather thin-skinned, incidentally. I think what we wind up with in America is an individual along these lines, and I'm not trying to backpedal on Obama, but I think that but Bush had much better advisors who kept him in line and advised him better. Obama seems to be that adolescent child who's broken free of his advisors and is now acting out all on his own. That's the point I'm making.
Well, that's the exact point that I'm stating in different ways, that he is out of control. The parental figure, in other words, his handlers or his advisors,
right,
are not present or else are doing...
Right. In other words, Rahm Emanuel being in Israel at a bar mitzvah, Suddenly we see the teenage Obama popping out. I'm not going into the Arlington. I'm coming back to Washington for the Paul McCartney concert. It's more fun. That's what you're saying. That is not a behavior fitting a president.
Of course not, but you just stated it. His parental figure, surrogate figure, let's say this Mr. Emanuel, is away in Israel, and he is behaving in an oppositional, arrogant, omnipotent fashion. And as I stated earlier, Michael, I adore dogs. I have a rescue dog. And the one thing that struck me, and I said to a colleague who's also a dog lover, I said, why is it that we haven't seen his dog much? I mean, whether you liked Bush or not, they were always bringing the Scotties on the plane.
Barney was always well, the dogs are always a stooge anyway. They're just a front to show they're a normal family. But what are you saying? Because the dog upstages him? He doesn't want him around?
That's a very possible point. Also, I'm saying is that it shows me that when I did see him with the dog on the few occasions for the photo ops, it just seemed very stilted, more so than other presidents, okay?
Well, they got a dog after they took over the White House to show that they're just, you know, Mr. and Mrs. America. They're Mr. and Mrs. Smith with a dog, you know, and the picket fence. They're just folk, but that's all BS. We know that. The fact of the matter is the dog is a very important symbol, and I was very impressed with Barney for a while, particularly when the Bushes' handlers gave Barney a handy cam to run around with at Christmas underneath the Christmas tree. I thought that was one of the neatest things I've ever seen, which is the White House from the dog's point of view. I don't know who came up with that one. That was fabulous. But you never imagine that happening under Obama, because that would be a threat to his own supremacy, is more or less what we're suggesting here.
We're suggesting completely is that a narcissist must be in the spotlight. They must have total center of attention on them, and when they're not and they feel thwarted by it, they can lash out either in an oppositional manner, in an aggressive manner, in an angry manner, and that, I think, is what's going on here.
Well, look at Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was very similar. Bill Clinton was an adolescent president as well. He also had a tragic childhood where his mother raised him. He had no father figure. Isn't that true?
Correct.
Now, this is a very interesting story that we're, you know, this storyline is a very intriguing one, and it doesn't apply solely to Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. As you said, it applies to millions of people, tens of millions of people, perhaps on a planet of 5 or 6 billion people. But we're talking about it because it relates to a president whose judgment seems to be so clouded by his emotional reactions or his subconscious drives that we are seeing a country that's being driven over a cliff. And I don't have to be any more specific than to say the following. He inherits a $1 trillion deficit, runs it up to $3 trillion in a year and a half, and says he cured the problem. He takes a nuclear arsenal and he says, I want you to go ahead with the START treaty and I want to take apart the nuclear arsenal. I don't like war. I don't like the nukes. I trust Russia. I trust China. He says, I'm going to take apart NASA. We don't need NASA. I'm going to end the greatest space program the world has ever seen. I want that done because it's a waste of money. I'd rather have the money for social programs than for rockets. This is very dangerous. We're in very dangerous trouble. This is not a man running the deli. This is a man running America, and that's why we're talking about it. And his handler is away right now, and apparently Axelrod has no real sway over him. He's not afraid of Axelrod. Isn't that true?
I don't believe so. I think for some reason, Mr. Emanuel, for whatever reason, I don't know his personality type, certainly, but for whatever reason, there is some sort of parental edict that maybe comes down between the two of them that affects Mr. Obama's thinking and judgment.
Very interesting, very intriguing, for sure. Before you go, what type of therapy do you practice, Athena?
Basically general. Just general.
Athena is your stage name, correct?
No, that's my real name.
So you actually are a Greek goddess?
Well, yeah, Athena was the Greek goddess of wisdom, so I guess
that. Now, who's a narcissist?
My mother, and don't even get me started.
My big fat Greek wedding, huh?
That was a documentary in my family.
I love it. Athena, I love this call. It made me happy. It's very rare that I get happy on this show. This is a hard thing to do every day, but tell you, it's callers like you who make my life worth living. I want you to try to call the show regularly, really, and I want you to give up your practice just to listen to this program.
We'll do that only on one condition. That you
What's
give
that?
Teddy a big hug from me.
Oh, I love Teddy. Athena, thank you very much. I'll be right back. It's 48 minutes after the hour. This is the Savage Nation. I direct you to my website for a story that you're going to find very, very interesting. It will not appear in tomorrow's newspaper. It's from the Israel National News. Rahm Emanuel under probe in Israel. A parliamentary aide is continuing Operation Rahm Emanuel, in which he probes the behavior of the White House chief of staff, who was in Israel for his son's bar mitzvah. Underneath that is a phenomenally interesting story about the global warming liars, con men. Tony Blair to earn millions as climate change advisor. Remember Tony Blair, the third way a liar? Solving the climate crisis is more than just a political agenda item, says Tony. It's an urgent priority that requires, well, you get the story, don't you? Millions as climate change advisor. Can you believe this con? And of course, Obama's going along with it because he's part of the radical left-wing cabal that wants their way with virtually every one of their agenda items, every one of them. And while you're on michaelsavage.com, there's a touching request for you. It will cost you pennies. Please send. There's a CHP officer in Marin County who was in a very serious motorcycle accident while on duty, and he's come out of the hospital. And I'd like you to send Officer Todd Overzet a get well card. It goes right to the Highway Patrol of Marin, Officer Todd Overzet, 53 San Clemente Drive, Corte Madera, California 94925. Please send him a get well card and tell him that you wish him well and hope he's back on his feet as soon as possible. It means an awful lot to him. And we try to help people wherever we can who mean something to this country, such as Officer Overzet. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, New York City, WOR. We haven't heard from New York today much. Carla, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just want to add to what everybody else has been saying about the psychological profile. The one thing that makes Obama completely different than any other president of the United States ever is that both his father and his stepfather were both radical Muslim communist agitators. And in this
Let's stop. The Kenyan father was a radical Muslim agitator?
In Africa, yes. Absolutely, positively.
And the father from Indonesia was a radical Muslim agitator?
Indonesian, yep. And when
why do you say, wait, I know that they were Muslims, but where do you get the radical part?
Read Jerome Corsi's Abomination. Well documented.
Well, okay, I'm not putting down the book, nor do I recommend that you not read it. I mean, the point is, though, to jump to that conclusion is rather, I think, counterproductive, because the people who are listening are going to turn off and say, now you've gone, you know, too far to the other side. I'm more interested in the psychology of the man, in that the psychology is reflecting a clouded judgment. You know, when I was in graduate school, my professor at Berkeley said to me, the first thing that happens with elderly people is their judgment fails. And I thought that was very interesting. I was studying Alzheimer's disease later on. And it stuck with me when I started studying Alzheimer's disease and how it may be related to environmental causations, such as toxins in our foods that may cause some of the plaques, the amyotrophic plaques. But the point is, when he said that the first thing that goes in an older person is their judgment, it made me start looking very closely at people around myself who were very old. And sure enough, he was right. But how many of the rest of us have clouded judgments as a result of our emotional baggage? Perhaps all of us. The issue, though, is the president. How clouded is he? How flawed is his judgment? And what effects are these flaws having upon the future of this nation? That's the point of today's discussion on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I want to begin today by directing you to the website, michaelsavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, Borders, Language, Culture. My lead story is Radical Left-Wing Dem Trades Stocks While in Power. Is he a Republican? Oh, no. He's a progressive. He hates Israel. Every chance he's gotten, he has attacked Israel. But you look at the man, Representative James Moran, and you wonder why he's not in jail. It's not that he was a stockbroker before he became a politician, and that he continued playing the markets during his rise through Congress. But if you read the Washington Post article about James Moran, D. Virginia, a member of the powerful House Appropriations Committee, you're not going to believe this. They're trying to spin it and say that all he was doing was perfectly legal. But if you look at it very carefully, you'll find out the following. And here's what you're going to find out. You have to dig through the story, and you're going to find out that he's not one of many lawmakers who just trade stocks while in office, which is what they're trying to say, and that he didn't violate any ethics rules. No. What you have to look at is which companies had pending cases before his committee. And then it becomes very interesting. We're talking about James Moran, D. Virginia, one of the most radical left-wingers of all. And what you find out is, in 2000, Representative Moran acknowledged borrowing $25,000 from a pharmaceutical lobbyist. The next year, Moran took a $50,000 loan from an America Online executive. He continued to make options bets. Is this who you want in Congress? Do you want a man like this in Congress? It's unbelievable, this kind of investment. But it gets worse than that. Here it comes. Moran in 2008, we're talking about current history. Representative Democrat Moran in 2008 disclosed stock in General Dynamics and BAE Systems, which both received earmarks requested by Congressman Moran that very same year, according to financial and earmark disclosure records. The earmarks were for $1.6 million each. Did you hear what I just said? Your representative from Virginia, your progressive phony, Representative Moran in 2008, had stock in General Dynamics and BAE Systems. Both companies received earmarks requested by this same representative that same year, according to financial and earmark disclosure records. The earmarks were for $1.6 million each. Moran submitted letters to Congress, certifying neither he nor his wife had any financial interest at stake. In my opinion, this deserves a congressional hearing. But since we have a dictator in the White House, you will learn nothing more about Representative James Moran's investments, the kickbacks, the earmarks, etc. And that's because we are now an Obama republic as opposed to a banana republic. Look, read the story yourself. I posted it on michaelsavage.com. It's enough to make you understand why everything is going wrong at once. We have the most corrupt, closed administration in history. Radical left-wing Democrat Moran trades stocks while in power. Read the story. It's on michaelsavage.com.
And it was that same James Moran who in 2003 said that Israel was the only reason we were going to war in Iraq. He's a blatant anti-Semite.
Well, he probably has some interest in Saudi Arabia or with Saudi Arabians, right?
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Delay urged on military gay ban, Washington Times. Good luck. Gee, I wonder why they're pushing it so fast. And New York City Community Board okays Ground Zero mosque plans. Do you believe it's a seed for peace? Many people say that the foreign mosque money is not a seed for peace, and that a mosque is not just the supremacist ideology that does it again. Here we see it again. New York City Community Board okays Ground Zero mosque plans. Obama stumps for boxer. They deserve each other. Those are some of the big, big stories that made it to the Savage Nation today. Hey, look at all the uncertainty and instability that Obama's creating. It's no wonder that the economy is shaky. Gold prices have been going through the roof, and that's why you should contact my great advertisers at Swiss America. Obama might be laying the economy low, but gold is defying that trend. Go to the best name in gold, SwissAmerica.com. So, anyway, what are you going to do with yourself? Travel? Let's talk about travel. I don't like traveling. Do you like travel? Is there anything to like about traveling? Can anyone explain to me what there is in traveling? I know when I was young, yes. I mean, I liked traveling. I hated it even when I was young, to be honest. Let me be clear. I always hated traveling. Hated it. I couldn't wait to get home to my own house. The only reason I could see for traveling is it makes you appreciate your own house more when you get home. Your own sink, your own toilet, your own refrigerator, your own pillow, your own blanket, your own window. The only reason to travel is that you come home and say, you know, this isn't so bad. The two times I almost died traveling were in Asia from food poisoning. So I will never go to Asia again. Once I almost died in Thailand, I was laying green in a bed in somewhere in the Chiang Mai province in a nice hotel. I ate chicken in some filthy, I don't know, some restaurant. Okay, leave it at that. That night, need I tell you what food poisoning is like when you really get a real case of it in Thailand? Well, I turned white, I turned green, and I was sort of like moaning, take me to a hospital. Mrs. S. sat up like on a death watch all night. She said, you turned white, you turned green, you turned blue. She said, I wouldn't take you to a hospital. I feared they would remove your kidneys and toss you out in the morning outside for the dogs. So, I mean, thankfully I didn't die from that one, but food poisoning, you feel like you're going to die from it. You know, the first food I had when I recovered from the food poisoning, the first thing I ordered from the hotel when I got better the next day was a pizza. I mean, pizza's not very good in Thailand, with fresh garlic chopped on the top of it. I did after the food poisoning. Well, I knew well enough to know that the garlic is antibacterial and this and that. The next time I almost died was in Japan, would you believe it? Again, chicken. Again, a restaurant. Again, almost died in the hotel. So you say, well, there's two bad experiences. Doesn't mean it's going to happen to anybody else. But that's neither here nor there. What is the joy of travel? You travel for weddings. You travel for funerals. You travel for family events. I cannot for the life of me understand. Well, all right, no, look, I live in a beautiful part of the world. Let me take that back. If you live in a bad part of the world, I can see why people like to come to San Francisco. It is a beautiful city. No question about it. The weather is magnificent. Florida is 95 degrees and humid. You have to live behind air conditioning and you could die. You walk out of a door in Florida, you feel like you're on fire. I can't take humidity. So I understand why people travel for weather, I guess. Then they travel for sports, for sporting events, if you're a sports fan, I suppose. But if you're a different kind of person, if your life is inside your mind, and most of what you do in the world is between your head, and you really enjoy reading the news and seeing the destruction that Obama's wreaking upon the Western world, there's no place like home in front of a screen. That's all I can say. You want to talk politics? Yeah, talk politics. You want to talk about the oil spill, that if it was a Republican, you'd hear the screams going to the White House, phony, you did it. You had relationships with BP. You weren't there. You were absent. The Interior Secretary was rafting. Phony, phony. But you won't hear it because, you know, it's Obama the loved. What else do you want me to talk about? Again, Playboy? I got the actual magazine. I can read it for you again. You want me to bore you with that? I'm not going to do it.
Savage.
Joining us now with a Savage Nation exclusive is Jack Hunter.
Good to be with you this evening, Michael. What I wanted to talk about is what some might call conservatism in exile. Now, a lot of you talk radio listeners out there have heard that phrase, and Michael, I'm sure you know what I'm referring to. And I'm not talking about the narrative put out by the man who sort of made that phrase popular, but a more realistic narrative when it comes to us conservatives and what we want to get out of politics. And mainly, what I want to talk about right now is the Republican Party. We had a situation where Bob Bennett, who many people considered a very conservative Republican, he was defeated in his race, and a lot of people are saying, well, how can this happen? Are the Tea Partiers, you know, really showing their muscle where they are? I want to take to task of those who think the Tea Partiers are going too far. Bob Bennett lost that race primarily because of his support for TARP, the Troubled Assets Relief Program. Kathleen Parker, who is a allegedly conservative columnist for the Washington Post and as a syndicated columnist, wrote an article defending Bob Bennett. She noted that he has an 84% rating from the American Conservative Union, is ranked high by the National Rifle Association, and was upset at the Tea Partiers for wanting to get rid of this guy who she thought was conservative on many levels because he supported TARP. Now, I think that is a damn good litmus test for grassroots conservatives. Any Republican who supported TARP needs to go. I don't care if you're a Bob Bennett and you have this sort of establishment connections. I even think Kathleen Parker mentions that Bob Bennett was endorsed by, and she says, this is a quote, establishment Republicans Newt, Mitt, and Carl, which is Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, and Karl Rove. That, to her, is reason to keep a guy like that. I want to make the argument that that is even more reason that guys like that need to go. We conservatives have really sold ourselves short for a number of years. You know, people say that Barack Obama is the most socialist president in American history, and you know what? That is absolutely right. Barack Obama is the biggest big government president in American history, by and far. You know who was the biggest big government president before Barack Obama? George W. Bush. You know who was the biggest big government president before Bush and Obama? It was Bill Clinton, and before that, George H.W. Bush Sr. Somehow, despite which party is in office, the government gets bigger, we spend more money, and things are getting out of control.
Exactly.
The idea that we need to go back to just voting for Republicans we would have in the past, like a Bob Bennett, for example, is completely insane. Let me give you this scenario, talking about conservatism in exile, because we've certainly been in exile, just not in the way some people mean. Let me give you the scenario. Imagine George W. Bush never existed, and we went straight from Bill Clinton to Barack Obama. When Barack Obama came in office in the year 2000, he did everything George W. Bush did. He started the Iraq War, implemented the Patriot Act, he doubled the national debt, he expanded Medicare, he enacted No Child Left Behind, he pushed through TARP, the whole bit. Do you think that a lot of the other talkers, you and I are the same, Michael, we take the GOP to task when they need to, but do you think a lot of the other talk radio guys or establishment Republicans would have been championing a Barack Obama if he had a Bush-style agenda? If he had done all those things, I bet they would. It needs to go beyond partisanship. Let me give you one better. A lot of the conservatives in 2008, like Mitt Romney, that was their guy. They thought he would have been a great candidate. Could you imagine if Mitt Romney was elected in 2008 and had the exact same agenda as Barack Obama, including national health care, which is based on Romney Care, the Massachusetts plan? Could you imagine the same people who are saying conservatism is in exile and we need to get behind the Republicans to stop Obama bashing Republican President Mitt Romney? I bet they wouldn't. And that's my point. The idea that we just need to unite behind the Republican Party despite what kind of Republican we're supporting, and that will finally stop the growth of government, is a narrative that is not only untrue, but has done nothing for conservatives in the long run. Let me outline a little more what I'm talking about here, because it really, as a conservative, it bothers me, this idea that if you just vote Republican, I think Michael Medved wants it, if we just have to start voting for Republicans, that's how we're going to get ahead. That's not the way to do it. We need to support particular Republicans, somebody who's really shown, you know, that they're worth it when it comes to spending and all that. But Bob Bennett and all those guys, it should be a new day for them. Let me give you another example. A very popular talk host, who you all will often say, Michael, is known for smoking cigars and such, wrote in his 1993 book about Bill Clinton. He said, "Get ready, folks, for the biggest confiscation of your money ever by the government. Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson looked like pikers compared to this guy." Who was the author talking about? He was talking about Bill Clinton. He was saying he was going to be the biggest big government president we've ever had, and socialism's here, and yada, yada, yada. Well, McClatchy News Service in 2007 reported that no president had spent more money since LBJ than President Bush. So in other words, compared to George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton looks like a piker, if you see what I'm getting at.
I see what you mean.
Look, Bill Clinton was awful. He's every bit the socialist that that author said he was. My point is, so was George W. Bush. So is Obama. If you had a Republican in there doing what Obama was doing right now, would many of these partisans who pretend to be conservatives be standing up and clapping and saying, "Well, I don't agree with everything, but we do need to support this guy. It would have been much worse if the Democrat had won." It needs to be a new day. The Tea Partiers have the right idea. We need to not vote for Republicans who voted for TARP. We need to be so extreme, as they put it, to not vote for any of these guys who continuously expand government despite what political brand or label it's under. We don't need to do that anymore. Kathleen Parker says Bob Bennett should have stayed in office because he's a good conservative despite TARP, and even offering up a health insurance plan that including an insurance mandate? No, ma'am. He needed to go, and establishment Republicans just like him, they all need to go. It's a new day, and thank God for that.
True.
My biggest fear when this whole Tea Party movement took off, I guess it was about tax day last year, was really the beginning of it in 2009, is that these people would be co-opted into just to being Republican partisans again. That some of the talk radio guys, as they're doing now, let's face it, you and I, Michael, we beat up on the Republican Party. We say, look, you have not been conservative here. You are not following through on what Republicans supposedly believe in. But a lot of our peers, I'm a much, different. A lot of the conservatives, self-described conservatives, just want to pull these grassroots conservatives back into the GOP fold. They want them to vote happily for guys like John McCain, or down here in South Carolina where I live, Lindsey Graham. That's what they would love. My greatest fear is that they will become that again. That's not what I'm saying. They're staying independent. And the Bob Bennett election, that he was ousted. Kathleen Parker, thank you. Yes, he was ousted. I'm sorry. You don't like that? That's exactly what needs to happen. That is proof that the Tea Partiers are remaining independent and are fighting for true conservatism, and that's where they need to stay.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
It was good to talk to you again this evening, Michael. And for more, you can go visit SouthernAvenger.com.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's been much talk about the financial reform bill making its way through Congress. Well, like the so-called health care reform that they pushed through, this bill seems to do nothing about any of the real problems that got us here in the first place. Joining us now with a closer look at what's going on is James Gattuso from the Heritage Foundation.
Hello, Michael. Nice to be here again. Well, it looks like the financial regulation bill in the Senate is going to be voted on today. It needs 60 votes and looks pretty much like it's a done deal. But the problem is the bill is not going to do what the proponents say it will. You step back and look at this. Basically, everyone does agree on the goal. The goal is to stop the risk of big financial firms failing and taking down the rest of the economy with them. That is pretty much undisputed by anyone. The question is, how do you do that? The bill that the Senate looks like it's going to pass is approaches that in the wrong way. What it does is two things at its core. The first is to authorize a council of regulators to take whatever steps are necessary in their view to stop big financial firms from failing. That is pretty unlimited power, ranging from being able to break up the companies to liquidating them to barring them from particular activities. Now, the problems with that are pretty obvious. First off, you're dealing with a lot of regulators, none of whom predicted, foresaw, or took steps to prevent financial crises in the past. They're completely blindsided by the 2008 crisis. So basically the theory of the Senate apparently is that if you get enough regulators who are wrong into a group, that suddenly their opinion will be right. You get eight or nine wrong answers together and you get a right answer.
It's insane.
That just doesn't make sense. And as a side effect of that, what you get is a handy list that is created for investors of the firms that the regulators do think are key to the economy. Now, what that does is create too big to fail firms. Instead of preventing bailouts, preventing the too big to fail doctrine from being adopted, it actually extends it. It actually reinforces it. So that's a bad option. Now, the second option, the second approach the bill takes, actually is a little bit better. What it does is start a process so that failed firms can be liquidated in an orderly fashion. Now, I'll surprise you and say I think that's a good approach. That is the goal. You want the firms to be liquidated without damage to the rest of the economy. The problem is that the bill does that through a very interventionist manner. What it does is create confer on regulators the power to seize financial firms at their whim, essentially, when they think that a bill, that a firm will be in danger of failing, the regulators are authorized to step in and take over that firm. Now, that flies in the face of private property rights, flies in the face of what we know about the way regulators operate. It's an invitation to abuse, an invitation to heavy-handed intervention from Washington, and is against everything that our system of government is based on. Now, what they're trying to do is to emulate a bankruptcy system. But they've done that without two rather important elements. They have a bankruptcy system without bankruptcy judges or bankruptcy law. That just doesn't make sense. It is dangerous.
What do you think they should do?
The answer, of course, is to use bankruptcy itself. Why not use the system that has been developed over 100 years and is used for virtually every other industry in America? Sure, you have to make some changes in it for the particular circumstances of large financial firms, but that is clearly a better approach, but it's one rejected in the Senate bill. Now, there's a lot of other provisions of the bill that are highly controversial. Probably the most discussed is the idea to create a brand new consumer regulatory agency, which will, frankly, not address any of the problems that led to the 2008 credit crisis. In fact, it will exacerbate them by increasing costs for financial firms, which will be passed on to consumers or make them unstable. So that is actually a provision that goes in the wrong direction. It's increasing intervention and heavy-handed regulation of this industry rather than stabilizing the industry and ensuring that incentives are furthered to ensure that those who take losses suffer the consequences.
Any signs that this problem is going to be corrected?
Well, you know, there are some signs. If you want to take a positive view, I think it is encouraging that the Senate is looking at a method of letting firms fail. If they're an elementary school student, you give them a B for effort there. So yes, you're on the right track. We have to allow firms to fail. We have to have a method for them to fail. But the fact that they've done it without bankruptcy law, without the supervision of judges, means that they don't understand how government works. And basically, you give untrammeled authority to regulators to close down a private business. That is going to be abused. It's abused in the past. It would be abused in the future. If I'm looking for something positive, I'd say, okay, you're in the right general area. You have to find a way for orderly failure to take place. And I'll also give them credit although it was done under considerable pressure, for changing the original plan, which would have married that closure, that system for orderly failure, with a bailout a fund. And this was fairly controversial, but it was clear in the original version of the bill that there is to be created a $50 billion fund to pay off creditors of failed firms. That's clearly a bailout system. It's clearly $50 billion that would have been used, and it would have been at the expense of American taxpayers. So that was taken out. It's still possible under this bill that some taxpayer funds will end up being used, but I think the big danger has been averted there.
What can we expect to see in the next few years?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about how this bill will be used. And a lot of it is up to the discretion of the regulators. Section after section gives regulators immense judgment, discretion, opportunity to shape the administration of this bill as they want it. And that's actually one of the dangers of the bill, because that discretion is so broad, regulators can probably easily abuse the powers. But I think we should be watching in the first few months, first couple of years actually, of this bill to see how it is shaped up. things I would look at is the consumer regulations, what kind of regulations, what kind of restrictions actually will be applied or imposed by this new agency. How active will it be and how destructive will it be of consumer choice? And also in the systemic risk councils, both the new powers of regulators to control risk through regulation and in the resolution process to close down firms. How extensive will that be? How often will those powers be used? And will they be abused in the sense of using them as a threat to control indirectly activities of firms that they cannot control directly? So I think in the first couple of years, we'll see how extensively these powers will be used and to what end. And I'm worried that whenever you give government powers, that can be abused. But we'll just have to wait and see whether those fears play out.
Thanks for the report, James.
Always nice to talk to you.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, today I want to talk about these questions. Can we recover from the presidency of Barack Obama even if the Democrats lose the majority? Do you feel threatened by Obama? What do you think Obama, Rahm Emanuel, and David Axelrod are cooking up for America right now? What is their next scheme to deprive us of our rights and freedoms? Should Obama be impeached for offering Joe Sestak a job in exchange for dropping out of the Pennsylvania Senate race? Do you believe that Rahm Emanuel has fled to Israel using his son's bar mitzvah as an excuse to avoid questioning about the Sestak job offer? If you live in San Francisco, how do you feel about Obama shutting down half the city to raise money for Barbara Boxer? And speaking of Obama and the last roundup, that's what I'm going to talk about right now, because last week I talked about the movie The Misfits with Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe and Monty Clift. I spoke about the amazing scene where Gable and his friends have captured wild horses to sell them to the slaughterhouses and tying them up in the desert. In that scene, Marilyn Monroe screams out against this heartbreaking outrage, one of the most touching scenes in movie history.
Greg, why are you killing him?
Just stand aside, honey.
Okay, you won. All right, you won. You
let
won.
Let go of that rope. Get out of here.
Get it, darling.
Pull him. Choke him down, Guido. Get off me, Rosalind.
Stop.
Get him. Rosalind. Shut up and pull that horse down. Get on.
I told you that this scene is a metaphor for how the great stallion of America had been lassoed and tied up ready for the slaughterhouse. Now remember, the movie The Misfits was made in 1961. This was a time in America when the left-wing counterculture was just beginning to gain strength. It was a time in America when some of the last open spaces in the West were getting filled up with suburban development. It was a time when cowboys leading vast herds of cattle were giving way to feedlots filled with steers choking on their own manure. It was a time when the brand of the United States started changing from U.S. to B.S. Now, the far left recently labeled George W. Bush a cowboy, but in reality, it's Obama who's the cowboy. Why do I say that? Because he's increased the number of troops in Afghanistan by 30,000. He's rounded up Christian militia groups that dare to challenge the new sheriff in town. He's hogtied the freedoms of the American people, binding their limbs with government health care, taxes, and a massive crushing debt. In reality, Obama is the real cowboy, and he's the last cowboy for the last roundup. And if this is the last roundup, where is the next frontier? Where do we go to escape the constraints of freedom, as generation after generation of America has been able to do? Where do liberty-loving people go to be free of this fencing off of our rights? Just like the pioneers of yesteryear, we have to strike out into unknown territory to escape the filth and corruption that is killing America. Obama and the last roundup. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. click on my picture at trn1.com today. So Obama came to San Francisco this week to help Barbara Boxer raise money for her failing Senate campaign.
Let's give the warmest California welcome to the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
And it's good to be here in the home state of my friend, somebody who has been fighting the good fight for this state for so many years, and then you look at her, you realize she started when she was 12. Your outstanding Senator Barbara Boxer.
But she still has the same mentality. Needless to say, he keeps blaming Bush for the economy.
Here you got folks driving a car in the ditch, and then we're out there in the mud pulling the car out of the ditch, and they're sitting there, comfortable, drinking on a Slurpee or something, and saying, you're not pulling the car out of the ditch fast enough. You're not doing that the right way. When you put your shoulder there behind you, you got to lean into it. So then we finally get the car out of the ditch, and they want the keys back.
Then he got downright foolish and disgusting.
I've had a partner, Barbara Boxer of California, who has fought with me and marched with me and held hands with me. And if you want to see that change happen, then doggone it, re-elect Barbara Boxer to be your United States Senator. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you. God bless America.
Oh, so we should vote for the same Harridan Boxer who's been there for 20 years and you'll get change? Boxer's running on change? I don't think Obama even knows what he's talking about anymore. Even senators from his own party, like Florida's Bill Nelson, say he's not doing enough to stop the oil spill.
Well, you've been very critical of BP. What about mounting pressure on the government, and specifically President Obama and his administration?
If this thing is not fixed today, I think the president doesn't have any choice, any better, go in, completely take over, perhaps with the military in charge. I think the president is going to have Secretary Salazar clean house in the Minerals Management Service, which has had such a cozy, incestuous relationship with the oil industry, and basically let the oil industry rule the roost.
And Congressman Darrell Issa, even though he backpedaled later, thinks that Obama's job offer to Joe Sestak to drop out of the Pennsylvania Senate race may be an impeachable offense.
It's very clear it's not for the White House to decide what's inappropriate. An allegation has been made that multiple sources in both parties, Anthony Weiner, Dick Morris, and other Democrats, have made it very clear, that, and even Axelrod, that they should answer that, in fact, this is serious. This is an impeachable offense, according to Dick Morris. It's not about what was done wrong. It's about the cover-up. And right now, there's a cover-up going on at the White House.
There's a new study out that says the marijuana use is tied to psychosis. This just came out, and I've been covering this for 10, 15, 20 years. The longer people use marijuana, the more likely they are to experience hallucinations or delusions or to suffer psychosis. Now, as you well know, most Democrats, particularly the so-called progressive types, are either former or current RDDBs, red diaper doper babies. And the study found that people who first used cannabis when they were aged 15 or younger, were twice as likely to develop a non-effective psychosis, which can include schizophrenia, than those who had never used the drug. It's good research. It was led by John McGrath from the University of Queensland in Australia, and it was based on a survey of 3,801 people with an average age of 20.1 years. Among all the participants, a longer duration since the first time they used cannabis was associated with multiple psychosis-related outcomes, the study said. I can read you the details. Many of them were diagnosed with non-effective psychosis, such as schizophrenia, and 233 of them had at least one hallucination, including one thought he was president. Individuals who had experienced hallucinations early in life were more likely to have used cannabis longer and to use it more frequently, it said. But the relationship between psychosis and cannabis and being a Democrat is far too complex to discuss here on the Savage Nation. I will say this. The study goes on to say people who were vulnerable to psychosis, in other words, had isolated psychotic symptoms, were more likely to commence cannabis use, which could then subsequently contribute to an increased risk of conversion to a non-effective psychotic disorder, the research said. The article said previous studies had also identified an association between cannabis use and psychosis, blah, blah, blah.
All the leaves are brown.
An interesting story on the Savage Nation website, michaelsavage.com, that you have to see on the bottom. You have to search to the bottom of it. New low temperatures in California. In fact, the chilly weekend temperatures were among the coldest in more than 50 years from Redding to Stockton, California, and we're expecting 6 inches of snow. That's why Al Gore suddenly went on the ground again. All that and more on michaelsavage.com. All right. Go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition, will you please?
Well, I got down on my knees.
Unbelievable. It's upside down. The evil in this land is overwhelming. Whichever way you look, liberalism is a mental disorder and an evil one. So, now that I've said it all, good night and good luck. I'm leaving.
Savage.